take the government services and then not give them anything in return. If you want to go live in the state of nature, that's fine, but you can't take anything for the government, because by the government's terms, which are the only terms under which you can enter the agreement, say that you have to pay taxes to take those things.
So you're saying that Nicola can go back into the state of nature if she wants to, but she can't drive on Mass Ave.
Exactly.
I want to raise the stakes beyond using Mass Ave.
Yes.
And even beyond taxation. What about life? What about military conscription? Yes. What do you say? Stand up.
First of all, we have to remember that sending people to war is not necessarily implying that they'll die. I mean, obviously, you're not raising their chances here, but it's not a death penalty. So if you're going to discuss whether or not military conscription is equivalent to, you know, suppressing people's right to life, you shouldn't approach it that way. Secondly, the real problem here is Locke has this view about consent and natural rights. But you're not allowed to give up your natural rights either. So the real question is, you know, how does he himself figure it out between, I agree to give up my life, give up my property, when he talks about taxes, or military conscription for the fact. But I guess Locke would be against suicide. And that's still, you know, my own consent.
Right.
I agree.
Good. All right. What's your name?
Eric.
So Eric brings us back to the puzzle we've been wrestling with since we started reading Locke. On the one hand, we have these unalienable rights to life, liberty, and property, which means that even we don't have the power to give them up. And that's what creates the limits on legitimate government. It's not what we consent to that limits government. It's what we lack the power to give away when we consent that limits government. That's the point at the heart of Locke's whole account of legitimate government. But now you say, well, if we can't give up our own life, if we can't commit suicide, if we can't give up our right to property, how can we then agree to be bound by a majority that will force us to sacrifice our lives or give up our property? Does Locke have a way out of this? Or is he basically sanctioning an all-powerful government, despite everything he says about unalienable rights? Does he have a way out of it? Who would speak here in defense of Locke or make sense, find a way out of this predicament?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I feel like there's a general distinction to be made between the right to life that individuals possess and the fact that a government cannot take away a single individual's right to life. I think if you look at conscription as the government picking out certain individuals to go fight in war, then that would be a violation of their rights, their natural right to life. On the other hand, if you have conscription, or let's say a lottery, for example, then in that case, I would view that as the population picking their representatives to defend them in the case of war. The idea being that since the whole population cannot go out there to defend its own right to property, it picks its own representatives through a process that's essentially random. And then these sort of elected representatives go out and fight for the rights of the people. It works very similar. It works just like an elected government, in my opinion.
All right, so an elected government can conscript citizens to go out and defend the way of life, the community that makes the enjoyment of rights possible?
I think it can, because to me it seems that it's very similar to the process of electing representatives to a legislature.
Although here, it's as if the government is electing by conscription certain citizens to go die for the sake of the whole. Is that consistent with respect for a natural right to liberty?
Well, what I would say there is there's a distinction between picking out individuals and having a random choice of individuals.
Like between picking out individuals.
Well,
right, what's your name?
Gokul.
Gokul says there's a difference between picking out individuals to lay down their lives and having a general law. I think this is the answer Locke would give, actually. go, Paul. Locke is against arbitrary government. He's against the arbitrary taking, the singling out of Bill Gates to finance the war in Iraq. He's against singling out a particular citizen or group of people to go off and fight. But if there's a general law such that the government's choice, the majority's action, is non-arbitrary, it doesn't really amount to a violation of people's basic rights. What does count as a violation is an arbitrary taking, because that would essentially say, not only to Bill Gates, but to everyone, there is no rule of law. There is no institution of property. Because at the whim of the king, or for that matter of the parliament, we can name you or you to give up your property or to give up your life. But so long as there is a non-arbitrary rule of law, then it's permissible. Now, you may say this doesn't amount to a very limited government. And the libertarian may complain that Locke is not such a terrific ally after all. The libertarian has two grounds for disappointment in Locke. First, that the rights are unalienable, and therefore I don't really own myself after all. I can't dispose of my life or my liberty or my property in a way that violates my rights. That's disappointment number one. Disappointment number two, once there is a legitimate government based on consent, the only limits for Locke are limits on arbitrary takings of life or of liberty or of property. But if the majority decides, if the majority promulgates a generally applicable law, and if it votes duly according to fair procedures, then there is no violation, whether it's a system of taxation or a system of conscription. So it's clear that Locke is worried about the absolute arbitrary power of kings, but it's also true, and here's the darker side of Locke, that this great theorist of consent came up with a theory of private property that didn't require consent, that may, and this goes back to the point Rochelle made last time, may have had something to do with Locke's second concern, which was America. You remember, when he talks about the state of nature, he's not talking about an imaginary place. In the beginning, he says, all the world was America. And what was going on in America? The settlers were enclosing land and engaged in wars with the Native Americans. Locke, who was an administrator of one of the colonies, may have been as interested in providing a justification for private property through enclosure without consent, through enclosure and cultivation, as he was with developing a theory of government based on consent that would rein in kings and arbitrary rulers. The question we're left with, the fundamental question we still haven't answered, is what then becomes of consent? What work can it do? What is its moral force? What are the limits of consent? Consent matters not only for governments, but also for markets.
All right, listening to WRUV FM Burlington, this is James with Radio Lyceum. You've been listening to Michael Sandel's Justice series. So we'll probably be playing a few more parts from this or excerpts from this series later on. He goes into talking about John Rawls later on. But we don't have time for it. I gotta get the heck out of here. I might play a few songs, but the weather's closing in, so I gotta get Hall out of here pretty quickly. So we'll play you some music after we play a public service announcement about library cards, because you should go out and read, or audiobooks if you're dyslexic. Either one, they're both great. I listen to a lot of audiobooks And I read from time to time. I'm just a slow reader. I can usually do better with audiobooks. But with that said, let's play you a public service announcement about the Library Card. Keep on listening to your better alternative, WRUV FM Burlington.
Do you have a library card? If not, seriously consider heading down to the Fletcher Free Library in downtown Burlington. They have a great selection of books, ebooks, and even audiobooks, as well as a bunch of cool programs and events to check out. If you're a resident of Burlington, you're eligible for a free card. This includes UVM and Champlain students, teens, adults, and those who live here temporarily. They also offer free Wi-Fi for its patrons. According to BBC Tech, reading a minimum of 30 minutes a week will increase health, well-being, confidence, self-esteem, and ability to sleep. Consider picking up a new book this week to read after a long day at work or classes. It will give you something to look forward to. This message is brought to you by your book-loving DJs at WRUV 90.1 FM, Burlington.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah, I just picked up a book today. So I'm at the library, the Howe Library that's right behind us. So definitely good advice. DeMarco time, everybody.
Joining me. See you again soon. Bye-bye. The king is in the-